Good morning.
Good morning.
And thank you for that blessing. I wonder if we... Uh-oh, where am I, Tom? I'm not in a good place. Well, yes, I am in a good place. What am I saying? Thank you all for coming today. I hope that my words come out of that silence that we just had, and I can get that other part of myself out of the way. You can hear me. Okay. Let me do this. How about that? Is that a little better? Okay. I didn't finish. How wonderful it is to be blessed. I wonder if we really understand the words we use towards other people and how they can bless them. Because in today's news, we're not hearing a lot of blessing over other people. And I wonder if that lack of blessing and that cursing isn't coming back to us in very violent ways as a human community on the earth. So anyhow, I'm happy to be here today. Very happy to speak to Richard Rohr's book, The Divine Dance. Those of you who know me know that I'm a big fan of Richard Rohr's. I've been following Richard since the early 80s. In fact, my daughter says she forgives me for making her listen to him when she was 8 years old. He was in the car, in the house, you know, wherever I was, there was that voice. Oh, not that guy again, you know. But, you know, we all have one person that seems to be able to draw out of us the deepest things that are in us. A lot of people say about Richard Rohr, it's not that he's telling me something I don't know, but he is bringing out of me the deepest truth, you know, of who I am. So I've read most of his books, listened to most of his tapes, and I highly respect his ministry. He started out as a father, mentor. Now I feel like I'm not sure where I end and he begins, because our theology is very much the same. So I'm very grateful for his life and for his ministry. The Trinity, which this book is concerned with, he discovered this, I think he said, close to 20 years ago when he read Catherine Lacuna's book, God for Us. And it was just about 20 years ago when I discovered the Trinity in readings that I was doing at Loyola Marymount. I didn't read that book, but I read articles that Catherine Lacuna wrote. And she also wrote the section in my systematic theology book on the Trinity. And I also read a lot of writings by Leonardo Boff, a Brazilian theologian that Richard also quotes, because the Trinity became a very big model for him in liberation theology and a model and a blueprint for community, equal partnership communities. So I was actually very turned on myself and wrote about the Trinity in many of my papers, mostly as a model of institutional church governance. Our institutional church should be modeled more on an equal partnership model. So I've been using this for many years and excited about it, just as Richard is. But something lately has been bothering me. And I think it was when Dave Rico did his series in May on Mary and the Divine Feminine. How many of you were here for that? Well, it was great. And, you know, he did a meditation one morning that were various... Thank you. You know what, Mary? I already got myself one. Yeah, thank you. He did a meditation that was mostly icons of the Blessed Mother and Jesus, mother and child. And that's a very important archetype, the mother But the very last slide, and it was all pictures of Mary and Jesus, the very last slide was this one. And it struck me deeply as a model of Trinity. Family. I was talking to Jeannie Hoyne about it that morning, and I was saying how deeply struck I was that this model was a model that spoke to me in my own life. And she was reflecting on that, and she sent me recently a poem that she wrote based on this model. And I wanted to read it this morning. It's called Christmas. The Christmas tree and flaming poinsettias announce the arrival of Christ, a welcome presence in tumultuous times, a powerless child dependent on a soft breast for comfort, acceptance, life itself. The mother, the father, the child share the same unspoken human desire. Love me. Thank you, Jeannie, for that. And it's all about love. The Holy Family starts with love between two people. The Trinity is about love, a flow, a radical relatedness, a perfect communion, a circle dance of love. So I want to begin with a video. Are any of Jenny's daughters here? Okay. Well, Jenny Cashman is the founding mother of Word and Life. Maybe she's our grandmother. It was Jenny's vision and call. It was a call. That's why I know the Spirit is here at Word and Life. The Spirit is directing us. It was a call to bring the Word into your life was what she heard. So it was Jenny that started Word and Life, and I came in 4 years later, and I was home. I came home, something I was looking for here. And so at Jenny's memorial, how many were at Jenny's memorial? Okay, great. Her family put together a video of Jenny's life, and I was watching that recently and thinking it really expresses to me a lot of what I want to say here this morning. So we're going to watch this video. Okay? All right. Where are you looking? I don't think there's another. It's Mary Joseph. It looks like a fourth person.
Yeah.
Oh. Well, this is to me this is an archetypal image that points to something greater than it is, but it's represented by this image. But thank you for, you know, everything is in the eyes of how you see it. So. Let's see if I can.
I hope you never lose your sense of wonder. You get your fill to eat, but always keep that hunger. May you never take one single breath for granted. God forbid love ever leave you empty-handed. Sit it out or dance. I hope you dance.
Love that video. It says a lot about the journey, the dance. It starts with Ginny by herself, and then this attraction for and movement towards another to complete herself. And then in this love between them, something new is created. Again and again and again and again. And then in the end, I just love the movement of her dance. Throwing out and gathering in, out and gathering in. It's the whole movement of the dance. And then in the end, letting go. Began with Ginny. And it ended with Ginny and the love and the creativity she found, not out there in another person only, but in herself. It's really about the love inside ourselves that we're looking for. Anyhow, I'm glad you enjoyed that. Ginny had a wonderful life. She was very free. I think she lived her life out of that dance. It's all about love. Andrew Greeley said, "Because I am a Christian, I am committed to the notion that the universe is finally animated by a love so powerful and passionate that the most aroused of human loves is pallid in comparison. In the last analysis, faith is fundamentally an act of love, a response to an invitation to a love affair that one senses, intuits, feels, and knows is what life is all about." So this original icon of the Holy Family speaks more to me in my own life and to the world today. I think we're being called to be a holy family. So what's missing for me is, in the beginning, in the foreword to the book, William Paul Young has a quote that just really struck me. He said, "Bad theology is like pornography. The imagination of a real relationship without the risk of one. It tends to be transactional and propositional rather than relationship and mysterious. You don't have to trust person or care for person. It becomes an exercise in self-gratification that ultimately dehumanizes the self and the community of humanity in order to avoid the painful processes of humbling and trusting. Bad theology is not a victimless crime. It dehumanizes God and turns the wonder and the messy of mystery of intimate relationship into a centerfold to be used and discarded." That's pretty powerful. And I think it's right. And I think, to me, the divine dance is the wedding dance between lovers. The current model, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, to me, is sterile. It cannot convey the passion and the eroticism and the desire that is in the relationship that's dancing in all of us. The missing element is the feminine or women. We try to feminize the Trinity by saying, well, the Holy Spirit is the feminine aspect of the Trinity. But the fact of the matter is, when the Trinity was formulated in the third century, nobody was thinking of women, and nobody was thinking of the feminine. Women were not rightful persons in their own right. So for me to try and fit the feminine into this model of Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, it has no power in that model to transform my life. So that's really where the initial bothersome thing was. And the whole thing that I think what's going on in the world today, at least a part of it, what I see happening right now, and I wrote about it in the Women's March, is what I call the rise of the feminine. The feminine is trying to rise up. This isn't just about women, but it is about women. But the feminine is different. The feminine is a spiritual energy, as is the masculine, that resides in both men and women. It's inside us. Years ago, in looking at the story of creation, I kind of wrote my own. And this is what I wrote. In the beginning was the dance between lovers, between Logos and Sophia, masculine and feminine. In the Book of Wisdom, it says, all things were made by your word and your wisdom, by both. These lovers were unique, but equal, in a dance that was mutual, reciprocal, flowing with an exchange of energy, erotic, compassionate, intentional, in the fiery exchange of their love, and the continual filling and emptying, a space was created. This space was an open womb of pure potential and possibility, was impregnated with the invisible spirit, energy, light of the loving relationship. In this sacred, virginal womb of spaciousness, of pure possibility, of emptiness, the Christ, the anointed, the beloved one, is being conceived, and from the nothingness, the silence, the emptiness, a visible form is taking shape in time over and over in myriad manifestations, for better, for worse, for richer, for poorer, in sickness and in health, in an eternal dance birthing of love. Mary symbolizes the feminine soul, which receives the mystery on faith alone with her yes. Out of this dance between the feminine soul of compassion and receptivity and the masculine soul of intention and outpouring, the birth continues in time. We are all feminine in reception of this mystery, and we are all masculine in its drive to manifest. In the fullness of time, when creation was ripe, Jesus consciously manifested this inner dance, out of which he was birthed from his own mother's yes. At his baptism, he was submerged in the experience of this dance between Logos and Sophia, the Word of God and the Wisdom of God. And after his temptation, he moved into its physical manifestation by drawing the world around him into the experience of the union of this dance. He was the form of love in the world, the pinnacle of all it means to be human and creature, taking up the whole of creation in himself. That is the inner dance that's happening in each of us. I like the idea, and I think what Richard picked up on and what I initially picked up on was the energy of the dance. And the Greek word that they use to describe the energy is perichoresis, and that's where we get circle dance. It's a dance. And Catherine Lacuna gives this definition to perichoresis. It's a word meant to convey that the ultimate basis of reality is not to be found in the solitude of one, but in the coexistence and communion of three. Unity is understood as communion, an interpenetration between one and another. It does not permit any kind of subordination, inequality, or hierarchy. The persons are irreducibly unique, non-interchangeable in their characteristics and actions, yet they exist in eternal communion. Difference does not mean opposition, nor does irreducibility mean pure and simple separation. It's their diversity that enables their communion. Communion of the Spirit of God means that all persons, while irreducibly unique, exist together as equal partners in Christ. This means that each person in the relationship shares equally in everything that concerns personal and social existences and which depends on shared decision-making in all aspects of the relationship between the persons, an equal partnership model. This is why marriage is a sacrament. But if you had a marriage that failed, don't blame yourself. We have never taught marriage as an equal partnership model. The dance my husband and I danced to was the one given to us by religion and culture. The man leads, the woman follows. We bought it, and it's not a bad place to start. But it came into tension because there is no freedom in that to grow your full potential yourself. So when he, the ultimate provider, began to be burdened with providing, and I, the ultimate homemaker, felt there was more to me than that and that I had something to offer the larger world, we didn't have a model. There was no model to tell us it was all right to experience those roles. And it caused lots and lots of years of unhappiness and fighting between us. And it was only grace, I would say, and having a certainty that we were meant to be together that helped us to move through this. I think this is what happened, and I can speak from my own experience. And we've mistaken marriage. I think one of the problems today and the problems that are arising with all these gender issues is because we've taken the archetype of masculine and feminine energy and we've absolutized it in gender. It means male and female. But really, the male and the female are meant to point to an inner reality inside all of us. We're all masculine and feminine in our souls. But what greater model than male and female for union? You have a penis and you have a vagina. And you can't create anything without both of them. You can't. They're not oppositional. We've made them oppositional. They're complementary. They're complementarities. They belong together. They cannot be divorced or they don't exist. So what do I mean by that, or what have I come to discover? Usually in the attraction to another, we're usually attracted to another because we're projecting onto somebody else what we haven't been able to claim for ourselves. So in my own experience, I look back and think, what attracted me to my husband? It was his confidence. He knew who he was. He knew what he was about. He knew how he was going to get it. He was not going to be dismissed. He strong, strength and confidence. I didn't have any of that. You know, I was the runaway bride. I didn't know how I liked my eggs. You know, if you told me I should like them scrambled, well, I liked them scrambled. If you told me I should like them hard-boiled, I liked them hard-boiled. If you said this, I'd say, oh, yeah. And if you said this, oh yeah, that too. I didn't really know who I was or have formulated an opinion of my own. And he was attracted to me for that very reason. I could go here, I could go there. Life wasn't black and white. He wanted it to be black and white. And I'm thinking, no, maybe not. And so these really became oppositional. And, trying to make the other into the way we were. And eventually, we both say it was grace and years, a lot of years, that we came to appreciate the difference in each other. And not only appreciate it, but that because we began to support each other in who we were, I began to find my own confidence, and he began to find his compassion. And so the marriage became complete. But the marriage wasn't just out there, it was in here. So he's complete in himself now, can operate out of both of those energies. And I feel I'm still gaining confidence, but I feel more complete in myself also. And this is, I think, the goal for all of us. And this is why I like Ginny's video. It began with Ginny, and it ended with Ginny. But the marriage dance was always in her. And what I mean by masculine and feminine energies, and this came to me in trying to think it through, and these are archetypes that exist, as I said, in both men and women. Okay, they're in all of us. And if we would take time enough to examine the way we think and the way we react in relational situations, I think we'd find it. Both energies want to create. They want to see something solid from the relationship. So both want to create, but they both are coming at it from different energies. To me, the masculine energy wants it now. Let's do it now. Okay, we both see, okay, let's do it now. The feminine energy says, well, wait, because it's not the right time. Maybe if we wait a little longer, what we're creating will have greater possibility to reach its full potential. Oh, okay. Well, now's the time. No, I don't think so. I think we need to wait a little longer. And so there's this dance, back and forth. Let's do it now. No, let's wait. And the thing is, eventually you have to act, because you can't hold something in that womb forever. It'll die. But if you birth it too soon, it'll also die, because it won't have everything it needs to reach the full potential. And this is where the mystery comes in. Neither really knows exactly when is the time. But something in both will say, now or never. And there's an openness and a not knowing to giving birth to that, that creates something new that contains both of those energies in the newness. So it's completely new. It's the whole evolutionary model of transcend and include. The new really is new, but it includes that. So we're all doing that constantly. And to me, humanity is still in the womb. That was one thing I learned from Teilhard, that to create is to unite. And since we're not fully united as a human family, we're not fully created. We're not there yet. We're still being formed. But all these different manifestations are involved in the formation. And I think in today's world, with what's happening out there on the big screen, and that's another thing, it's not out there. What we're viewing is really what's happening within the human species right now. I think Richard said in the beginning of the book somewhere, he felt the greatest dis-ease of the humanity today is disconnection. And I think he's right. We are not connected. We're not connected on very many levels, and especially to the world around us. Do we really think the violence we're seeing in nature right now has nothing to do with the violence in the human community right now? I mean, of course it does. I opened the paper this morning, and Puerto Rico, totally devastated, or what was the headline, with this storm. And I'm thinking, didn't our president just say he was going to totally destroy North Korea? Well, when you put words, the power of words, curses and blessings, they come back. They come back on us as a family, as a human community. What we do to one, we do to ourselves. And so there's a connection there. We are disconnected at very, very many levels. And even with our bodies, we're look at the medical industry today. We've just handed our bodies over to pathologizing like a machine. And we don't recognize that we're body, soul, spirit, whole human beings. And the body is manifesting a dis-ease, an imbalance in the whole body, soul, spirit being that we are. And so rather than listening to the body and what it might be trying to help us see about our imbalance and our lack of coherence, we medicate too quickly. I'm not against medications. I'm just saying we're disconnected and we're not paying enough attention to how we can heal our own bodies. So, I mean, this is, to me, becoming more and more glaring as I look out into the world, is this disconnection between spirit and matter, that there's the world out there and then there's my inner life here, this word and life. For years, that's the way it was for me, word and life. I came here and then I went back out into the world, word and life. Until all of a sudden I realized it's all one. It's all one world. So this is part of the dance. And what we've done is, and I think, like I said, the problem is that we've made it about gender. This isn't about whether you're a man or a woman. This is about this inner wholeness and this inner dance. It's not about gender. It's about something that gender points to. And I think that's where it's all about love. Why can't we recognize love? Just because there are two men doesn't mean they're the same. I mean, somebody looks the same doesn't mean they're the same. And why can't we? I have lesbian friends that have been married for 20 years. They have a faithful, monogamous, generative relationship that is more loving in many ways than a lot of other relationships I see. Why can't we recognize love when we see it? Why does it have to fit a certain model that we consider to be normative? It's all about love. And I think that's why the gender issues are rising so much, is because it's about what does it mean to be human on the planet today? What does it mean to, and this is why I think we're seeing on the big screen our choices. With this current administration, it seems to me, and this is what I think the Women's March, or, you know, brought out in me, with all these women coming together, it was really the feminine rising up to say, we don't want to go back to that power over model. We want an equal partnership model. We need compassion in this world as much as we need force. There's a lot of suffering, and compassion is rising. So those are some of the things that have been stirring in me since I read, and I've read Richard's book twice now. I read it as a daily meditation, in addition to his daily meditations, which to me are so excellent. But I think that's the only way to really read Richard Rohr. If you're looking for some kind of logical laid out, you know, he you can feel the dance in him. He's dancing around what he's talking about and coming at it from different angles, letting go, coming back in another way, letting go. I heard him speak on the Trinity many years ago at the Religious Education Congress. I went up to him afterwards and I said, that dance you're talking about is in you. You could feel it in him, you know. So I think the way, and this, I'll close, we can have a break. And what I'm hoping after the break is just to have some discussion. I hope this is stirring up something in you that you might want to say or ask about or talk about, because, you know, it really is all a mystery. There's no one way to describe this mystery in which we live, and we're very fortunate to have the diversity, and especially the kind of diversity here at Word and Life. The reason it's been home for me is because of the diversity here and the openness to that diversity that I feel here. I think we are in a field of compassion here, and compassion can make room for all the differences. But I think one of the ways, and this has been a big theme of mine for the last couple years too, is one of the ways we can maybe work personally to restore this harmony and this dance is through a practice of silence. There's another book I'm reading that I read 20 years ago and pulled it off the shelf and had seen almost every page was highlighted, and so it obviously was important for me around this same time. It's called Search for the Meaning of Life by Willis Yeager, I think is his name. Anyhow, here was a story he told in this book. The village had no rain for a long time. All the prayers and processions had been in vain. The skies remained shut tight. In the hour of its greatest need, the village turned to the great rainmaker. He came and asked for a hut on the edge of the village for a 5-day supply of bread and water. Then he sent the people off to their daily work. On the fourth day, it rained. The people came in jubilation from their fields and workplaces and gathered in front of the rainmaker's hut to congratulate him and ask about the mystery of rainmaking. He answered them, "I can't make it rain." "But it is raining," the people said. The rainmaker explained, "When I came to your village, I saw the inner and outer disorder. I went into the hut and I got myself in order. When I was in order, you too got in order. And when you were in order, nature got in order. And when nature got in order, it rained." In its simplicity, this story has a lot more to say than many programs and suggestions for improving the world. I think it begins with us and going inside and sitting in the presence of this dance, just to be present to it, and get in touch with our own disorder, our own imbalance, our own incoherence, and stay with it and try to get our house in order. When our own inner house is in order, it's amazing what happens in the relationships around us and the way we respond. When it's in order in the family, then the larger family around and the larger family around, and we evolve into the next stage of our human development, which to me is the spiritual stage. It's amazing to me. Oh, I have one more thing I want to show you about the feminine. Oh. Now I have to go. Well, okay. Remember the Women's March? I mean, I didn't feel really compelled or called to go on the Women's March, but the day of the Women's March, I could not be compelled to watch TV all day at what happened. And that's when I wrote that reflection about the feminine rising up. Well, recently with the solar eclipse, I kept thinking, what is all the hype? Okay, not for another 100 years or whatever, but, you know, we've seen eclipses before. Oh, did you get your glasses? And all these people traveling to the place where it was going to, you know, on the news, and people were emotional over it, and the day of the eclipse, this one couple actually got married right at the fulcrum, and sobbing and crying, and what is up with that? And then in the evening news, I saw this, and I thought, that's it. Wait a minute. The feminine, two powerful forces of nature that are like gods, the sun and the moon. The moon, feminine, didn't eclipse the Son, but married the Son. So on that note, we'll take a break, and then I hope we come back and have some conversation, and in the end, you'll get to use those little scarves on your chair. Okay, thank you.